This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on Talk Louisiana, we'll hear from attorney Chris Whittington, former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He's joined by pharmacist Doug Boudreaux. They are the owners of Hope Pharmacy and are on the cutting edge of the medicinal marijuana business in Louisiana. This is now a reality, and we'll talk about it with these guests. Also, former Governor Edwin Edwards celebrating his 91st birthday today, and we'll wish him well with our listeners, and we'll hear from the only four-term governor in the history of Louisiana. And journalist Paul Greenberg, the author of The Omega Principle, Seafood, and the Quest for a Long Life and a Healthier Planet. Paul Greenberg is the author of the previous bestseller, Four Fish, and featured regularly in the New York Times. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. Good morning and welcome to Talk Louisiana. I'm Jim Inkster, and our guest today later, Governor Edwin Edwards, celebrating his 91st birthday, and we'll hear from Paul Greenberg, an interesting journalist who's written a lot about health matters. His latest book is The Omega Principle, Seafood and the Quest for a Long Life and a Healthier Planet. But we begin with two gentlemen involved in a health industry. Medicinal marijuana. The Louisiana legislature, in its wisdom, has voted to expand the medicinal marijuana program, and now there are companies that are up and running, getting ready to dispense marijuana to people who need it for medical reasons. And two of the gentlemen are Chris Whittington, the former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party, a prominent attorney here in Baton Rouge, and Doug Boudreaux. They have combined, along with Doug and his wife Jennifer, to form Hope Pharmacy, awarded Northwest Louisiana's sole medical marijuana pharmacy earlier this year. 877-217-5757 if you'd like to join the conversation, in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. And this has been quite a process, and I saw that Melinda DeLod had a story yesterday about how you were awarded the contract. Chris, let's start there. You're a lawyer. Was this a laborious task, or did this come rather easily to you and Doug?
Well, it was first off, thanks for having us. But, yeah, it was very laborious in that there were a lot of rules making that occurred before the licensing started, and we participated heavily in that. And then, of course, there was a lot of competition for the licenses themselves. I guess our application was probably 8 inches thick. For all kinds of things, for operations manuals to security things, and that's kind of where I focused was security. And, of course, Doug won the pharmacy side.
Were there a lot of applicants?
Well, in our region, there were three. I think there were 20 altogether for 9 licenses.
Now, as mentioned, Doug operates pharmacies in Shreveport and in Lake Charles, but this particular company is in Shreveport.
That's right. And Doug's pharmacies are your regularly generic pharmacy, but also he has compounding capability in both of his, which we'll have in Hope Pharmacy as well, to create the oil into different applications for the patients.
And, Doug, this will be a separate entity. You won't go into one of your pharmacies and pick up some marijuana as well. You have to go to a different location, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you so much for asking that question because we're already getting phone calls at our regular pharmacies. It'll be a separate entity. It's located on Kings Highway directly across the street from the Feistweiler Cancer Center and University Health.
Have you had some models in other states that you're following?
Yeah, Connecticut is the closest state that our law mirrors, but I did attend the National Marijuana Convention in Colorado last year and learned a lot about the industry and how it works.
Who comes to a National Marijuana Convention?
It's the Wild West. Everybody that's dispensing marijuana attends that, but luckily they have some good horticulturists, botanists, and actually neurologists that attend, doctors, MDs.
Mm-hmm. What's a serious matter, and it has been shown definitively that marijuana helps a lot of people who are in pain, and the legislature in the last session did pass a bill, both the House and the Senate, by pretty good margins. Senate voted 25-9 for Ted James's proposal to include glaucoma, severe muscle spasms, intractable pain, post-traumatic stress disorder, and Parkinson's on the list eligible for medicinal marijuana. So when somebody comes to your pharmacy, how will they be able to provide verification that they have one of these issues.
So the rules are very, very strict, especially with Louisiana Board of Medical Examiners, and they actually, before doctors can qualify, they've got to take a test on their website in order to get their dispensing license or their recommending license. But the rules are very, very clear that the doctor's got to show in their file the disease state and that it's diagnosed properly. So, for instance, the intractable pain, they've got to show some spinal injury or some sort of thing. And that's really defined as chronic pain. So they've got to be on medications for long periods of time, like opioids. So the other part of that rule is that before the doctor can recommend the therapeutic marijuana, the patient and doctor have had to try other strategies in healthcare before they attempt the therapeutic marijuana. So in essence, the state of Louisiana, I think, is probably the strictest state in the United States as far as the rules go, and they're doing it right.
Well, almost 20 years ago, my mother died with a brain tumor, and in her final stages, they prescribed medicinal marijuana in a pill form. This is the actual type you smoke that we're talking about, right, that will be available, or how will it work?
Yes, that's correct. Your mother got a drug called Marinol, which has been available on the market for many, many years. It's 2.5 and 5 milligram dosages of THC, which is the active ingredient, one of the main cannabinoids.
But our law does not allow smoking of the product.
That's correct.
So this is
our routes of administration. It's going to be in an oral oil form.
Okay, so you won't go there and buy a bag of marijuana.
No, sir. It's only in an oil form, and we can either apply it topically, you can take it under the tongue, or we can do a suppository or troche.
Okay, well, that's a good distinction. So some people believe that that's not as effective as the type you smoke. Has it been proved to be so?
The state of Louisiana's medical marijuana is going to have 10 milligrams of THC. The type that you smoke is 100% THC, so it's much more potent. What we're trying to do here is get rid of the euphoric effect of the marijuana and just go with the therapeutic effects for the disease state.
Okay. But some would believe the euphoric effect actually helps people who are in pain.
No, you're
shaking your head.
No. There are two types of receptors. There are CB1 and CB2. CB1 is in the brain, and CB2 is peripherally in the body. And that's the targets for the pain.
Okay. Well, you're not up and running yet, but you're getting close. What's that process like, Chris?
Well, we're working with the architect. We've cleared the land. It's a big piece of red dirt right now, and so as soon as we can get started, we'll start building. We have our permits, and hopefully we'll be in place by November, December, and then we can do the finishing touches and be open after the first of the year.
So we're talking within 6 months.
That's right, and it's going to be a high-security building. It's cost more than most buildings because it's going to be so secure.
Is there any indication what the market will be?
We've been doing hospice care for about 20 years, and about 95% of our patients, are treated very, very well through our process. About 5% of those patients, might suffer a little bit. And so that's why we got into this type of thing. So that's not a large volume of patients. So we'll see.
877-217-5757 is your number. Locally, 297-5633. Our producer is Ali Baltazar. Our guests are Chris Whittington, longtime attorney, former head of the Democratic Party in Louisiana, and Doug Boudreaux, who is combining with his wife Jennifer and Chris for Hope Pharmacy, and they are involved in providing medicinal marijuana for those in need at the Northwest Louisiana location. How many locations are there in the state?
There'll be 9. The number of licenses are 9. They're divided by the health districts from the Department of Health and Hospitals. So right now there's 9, and we think it'll stay that way.
Katie in East Baton Rouge. Katie, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
I heard a while back that CBD oil was legal for children with autism now. I have a daughter with autism, and I was wondering if the panel could comment on that and tell me if that was something that would be included in their dispensaries.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I'm very excited about that. There are three subcategories of autism that it's going to be approved for, but the main one is going to be the combative, destructive behavior in children. There's some good studies by the NIH about treatment of those patients. And yes, that will be available in our dispensary.
All right. Thank you, Katie. And Hope Pharmacy, the company that Chris and Doug are involved with, will be the sole medicinal marijuana provider for Bienville, Bossier, Caddo, Claiborne, DeSoto, Natchitoches, Red River, Sabine, and Webster parishes. And, of course, I would imagine there will be a provider here in Baton Rouge as well.
Yes, that's going to be Capital Wellness Solutions, and it's going to be over there by Arlea Lake.
Okay. And as Melinda DeLotte noted in her column yesterday, there was an extensive background check on these gentlemen to prove that they were suitable to be in this line of work. And I did not know until I read her column that you're also a deputy sheriff, Chris Whittington.
I am. I am. I'm the lawyer for the sheriff, so I kind of have to be a deputy too. Well, I'm not going to carry a gun.
Well, I have a feeling you're far more deserving than Scott Rogers was, who was a deputy sheriff here in East Baton Rouge Parish. But nonetheless, this is serious stuff, and a listener asks about whether this has been proved to be universally effective. I would imagine it's like most anything else. It's an individual process. It works better for some than others. Am I right?
That is absolutely right. And out there in the market today, there's so many different types of CBD oil that people are marketing that are sold over the internet. There's no consistency in those products. So patients, it's working 1 month, and the next month it's not working.
All right, 877-217-5757. A bit more time with Chris Whittington and Doug Boudreau, and we'll return after this brief pause with more Talk Louisiana on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we're making some adjustments today to our transmitter. So if you're having some difficulty listening, you can go online and everything is fine at WRKF.org, and we'll be back full blast tomorrow if you're in one of the locations affected. 877-217-5757, and our guests for a little bit longer are Chris Whittington and Doug Boudreau. They're involved with Hope Pharmacy, one of the providers for medicinal marijuana, and their contract is in northwest Louisiana, which includes the greater Shreveport area. Doug already runs pharmacies in Lake Charles and in Shreveport. And again, if you're in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, a listener asks about where this is manufactured. Who's making the drugs?
Oh, well, there's going to be two locations. There'll be LSU Ag Center and then also the Southern University Ag Center, and they'll be the sole places that can make it and probably deliver it as well. They keep the inventory of it, and they track it from the facility to each of the nine pharmacies.
And another listener asks about whether other states allow the form where you smoke it. Are we unique in doing it the way we're going to do it?
Yeah, we're not going to be able to smoke it here, and we can't even make it in edible form so that children can have look at it and say that it, maybe overdose on it. So even the packaging that's required is very, very strict that it's got to be child resistant.
Well, it's a new day, and some thought this would never happen in Louisiana. How many states have done this?
26, I believe, have some form of medical marijuana, and then some also have recreational.
And, well, yeah, we know that, but in the South, this is a heavier lift, I think, because of our belief that we're into morality, and some people don't like recreational drug use. But this is not recreational drug use. How do you make the case that you're not going to be doing this for people? Like in my case, many years ago, I broke my neck. I can't just walk in and say, oh, I've got this terrible pain. I need some marijuana. Doesn't work that way, does it?
It absolutely does not work that way. I think that's probably why Louisiana got it passed, was because they were so strict on the rules. They really did want to help the patients that are in need. But I'll say this to patients, people out there that, or might be against it or have a problem with it, and that is if they've ever been with a patient that is suffering or actively dying or has any kind of issue that is unresolved by traditional medications, just looking into the eyes of that one patient, you want to be able to have everything in your toolbox to help them. And this medication is real. This therapeutic marijuana is real. It really works in the brain center like no other medication that's out there. And it's very effective for these patients. And I will go to bat for these patients every day, all day long, because I believe in it.
Well, the day is upon us in which this will be a reality in Louisiana, and we will see how it works. But I would imagine there will be a long line of people who are interested in this. Generally, Doug, when there is a prescription for somebody to receive this, does it last forever, or do they eventually get weaned off this?
No, actually, so the state legislature said that the doctors couldn't prescribe it because it's a Schedule I. Mm-hmm. So they put a notation on it that it's a recommendation. So
it's a recommendation, not a prescription.
That's correct. So doctors will recommend the medication based on a form that the Louisiana Board of Medical Examiners gives them. They will then take it to a pharmacy and get it filled, and each time they get it filled, we've got to counsel them on it and make sure that.
So the pharmacist makes the final call.
The pharmacist has the right to refuse any patient that he sees fit.
Okay, how many pharmacists are there in Louisiana, ballpark?
Oh, 4,000 or 5,000, maybe.
Yeah. So these people are going to have a lot of say in who gets medicinal marijuana.
Yep.
What about doctor shoppings? There's always that concern.
That's right. And the Board of Pharmacy put in a rule that each time we fill the prescription, the recommendation for marijuana, that we've got to look up the patient on the prescription monitoring program to make sure that they're not getting it filled someplace else or on any other kind of, a lot of other medications that might interact with it.
And I mentioned the new items that are involved in receiving this, but previously, if you had cancer, you could get it, obviously.
Yes.
And a listener asked about epilepsy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Parkinson's. Parkinson's is a big one.
Parkinson's and now autism as well.
That's correct.
Seizures.
Yeah. Well, Chris, this is a new line of work for you.
It is. we've been, Doug and I have been friends for a long, long time, and it's easy for me to do business with Doug and Jennifer, and I'll tell you, the therapeutic side of this is absolutely amazing on the things that it can do that opioids create so many problems over, and it's a solution, really, for opioids.
Well, we wish you well, and certainly we'll follow this, and when do you think you'll dispense your first recommendations?
We're hoping it'll be January that we'll be open and up and running.
Okay. Well, thank you, Doug Boudreau, and congratulations to you and your wife, Jennifer, and to Chris Whittington. This is going to be an interesting process, and you're on the cutting edge of what's going on. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And now we're joined by His Honor, the former governor of the great state of Louisiana, Edwin Washington Edwards, born on this date, August 7th, 1927, in the great hamlet of Marksville, Louisiana. Not Crowley, but Marksville. And Edwin Edwards, doubt that you remember that day, but you remember some days not there, not far after that. And certainly you have lived through the Great Depression and many historic events since. And at 91, we certainly are here to wish you a happy birthday, Edwin Washington Edwards. Good morning to you.
Well, thank you very much. I've had a great life, and I have no complaints, and I'm very grateful for the way life has treated me.
And I'm sure you're celebrating this with your 5-year-old son, Eli. I think he turned 5 on the 1st, didn't he?
That's correct. This morning, Trino, my beautiful wife, woke me up with a kiss and a cup of coffee at 7 o'clock. I got dressed, and I took my 5-year-old son to preschool, and I've been answering telephone calls and emails all morning from well wishes, and I'll tell you what, I couldn't be happier.
Well, you have had a great life, one that, of course, has had its ups and downs, but not many 91-year-old men have a 5-year-old son and a beautiful wife who is not yet 40.
Well, she'll be 40 August the 19th, but she doesn't like to be reminded.
877-217-5757 to talk to the governor, Edwin Washington Edwards. 16 years he led our state, 1972 to 1980, and then 1988 to 92, and in 1984 to 88, and 1996 92 to 96. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Governor Edwards.
Well, it's an honor to say happy birthday to the governor. And, Governor, I grew up in New Orleans and lived there up until Katrina. You were good to New Orleans as governor, and I thank you for that. But I have one question. I was an AFL-CIO union shop steward in 78 when you signed the Right to Work bill. Now, as I see the Louisiana economy today, it's about the worst of the nation. If you had to do it over again, would you still have signed the Right to Work bill?
Under the circumstances and the conditions that existed at the time, yes. Let me explain something to you. Vic Busey, who was the president of the AFL-CIO, came to me and he said, Governor, I just want you to stay out of the contest. I said, well, why? He said, because I have the votes to kill it in the Senate, and I want you to promise me that whatever happens, you won't do anything. So I said, well, okay, Vic, if that's what you want, let me tell you, if he'd asked me to veto it, I would have. But I'm kind of glad I didn't. I'm glad he didn't. But anyhow, after some friends of his that he thought were friends betrayed him in the Senate and let the bill pass, he came to me and he said, look, I'm keeping my word to you. I'm not going to ask you to do anything about it. Just let it go. And that's what I did.
And that's an amazing story. I don't know that you've told it before, but thank you.
I never have.
You never have. But if he had said, I need you to veto this, you were a close ally, you were tied to labor, you would have said, I'll do it.
Well, if he'd asked me first, yes, I would have. But after he got a commitment from me to stay out of it, then I kept my word because I had announced that I was not going to, based upon his representation to me, I had announced that I was not going to do anything about it. So I had to keep my word.
877-217-5757. We'll spend another segment with Governor Edwin Washington Edwards on his 91st birthday, and we're back after this pause for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and our special guest for a few more minutes is Edwin Washington Edwards, a one-of-a-kind person and a politician who ranks probably greater than anybody, including the Kingfish, who was only on the scene for 7 years as a statewide and national figure. But Edwin Washington Edwards was on the scene for well over a quarter century as a congressman, state lawmaker, and, of course, a four-term governor, elected four times as the leader of our state. And it's a case now, after all these years and having served more than 8 years in federal prison, some of your fiercest enemies are now praising you. Yesterday, I couldn't believe it, Bob Livingston was with us, Governor, and he was saying all kinds of nice things about you.
Well, that was very, very nice of him. I'm very happy that things worked out for him. You know, he was a breath away from being Speaker of the House, and unfortunately, something happened and stopped that, but he has recovered from it and is doing very well, and I'm very happy for it.
Well, you are a man of 91 who has outlived many of your friends and many of your enemies. John Volz is gone. Frank Palazzolo is gone. And some of those who are still alive who were your tormentors, people like Eddie Jordan.
Jim Letton,
yeah. They have been discredited. Does that make you feel better?
No, I'm not a vengeful person. They took advantage of me for their own political reasons, and I understood that at the time. I never dreamed that there would be the outcome that there was. And, you know, they used to say that you never find 12 people in Louisiana to convict Edwin Edwards, and they couldn't. Palazzolo kicked off the person who was leading the effort to acquit me, and that's how it all happened. But it's all in the past. I've survived it. But if that hadn't happened to me, I never would have met Trina, and I wouldn't have Eli. And frankly, as bad as it was, Eli's worth more than what it costs.
He's quite a young man, isn't he?
Yes. I asked him the other day if he wanted to go to the store to get a Coke. He said, that's a damn good idea.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And
I understand
we're already talking about EWE and 43.
Well, I wanted him to have my initials, although I don't believe in juniors. So I named him Eli after a famous Jewish prophet and judge, and Wallace is my father's middle name, so we named Eli Wallace Edwards so we would have the initials EWE. And Trina made a little shirt for him that says, EWE for Governor 2053.
He could do it in 2043, so we may not be that far away.
I don't want him to go too early.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of our current governor?
Oh, I'm a great admirer here. I think one of the best things he's ever done to the state is to keep Vitter from becoming governor.
Vitter was another one of your tormentors.
Oh, yes, and he met his Waterloo.
Now, I understand working as a lobbyist for some entities in Russia.
That's correct. His attitude, while I knew him, was always conservative, blah, 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 blah. But now, for money, he's working for Russia.
Speaking of, you know Donald Trump pretty well.
Very well.
How well?
Well, he was at the mansion several times while I was governor, trying to get a riverboat license, but by the time he had done that, the 15 licenses had already been allocated, and we weren't able to accommodate him. But he was very cordial, and when he was 50 years old, he had a big birthday party in Atlantic City, and I was one of his guests.
I heard you slept on his yacht on his 50th birthday.
What's that?
Were you on his yacht on the night of his 50th birthday?
Oh, yes. I spent the night on his He just bought a $100 million yacht from a Greek tycoon that had a disco room and a hospital and 40 different employees on to maintain it. And I spent the night on it. It was a real experience.
Governor, independent of all the controversy swirling around the president, how hard is it for a person to take a job like that, the biggest in the world, and he's a man who was in business and had success in business, but he's in a new realm, and government works much differently than business. How difficult is the transition?
Well, it's very different, very difficult. He had no experience dealing with the Congress, and that's been a big problem for it. And frankly, although he's a friend of mine, I just wish he would quit tweeting. If he would do that, I think it'd be best for the country and for him.
He seems to have a very thin skin for a man who has, of course, absorbed a lot of blows. In your case, right now, if I were to say something badly about you, I don't think you'd really care. But he obviously does care.
Well, I only care about things that I do wrong, not what anybody else does.
Well, you have been around, and as mentioned, you ultimately went to prison. I'm sure you remember that day, May 9th, 2000, exactly 28 years after you took the oath of office. That had to be one of the worst days of your life.
Well, I was 75 years old, facing a 10-year sentence. Frankly, I wondered whether I would live out the term. But, you know, I survived, and I served my fellow prisoners. I was head of their library, and I helped a number of them get their GEDs. And anytime I could, I wrote letters for them, and I took care of them, did everything I could within the rules to help my fellow prisoners, because many of them didn't have any relatives. They were far from home. They had no money. And they were far more miserable than I was. But I did what I could to make life better for them.
Well, I think people of your vintage probably have infinitely more respect for the system we have in this country. And the system, of course, is flawed, but at times the country asks for sacrifices. And in your case, as a very young man, you were forced and accepted the responsibility to fight for your country. Although you were not in combat, you were at the end of World War II. And then, and then when you were convicted of a crime that you say you did not commit, and many, of course, believe that you did not, including Bob Livingston, by the way, you did not shy away from serving your time.
I did not. I figured that I've had so much good fortune in my life, some deserve, some not, that I was tolerant of the fact that I was taking this undeserved bad fortune. And I recognize that it all happened not from things that I did or said, but from things other people said that were not true in order to save themselves, and with the biased effort on the part of a federal judge to convict me.
When you were 18 years old, 73 years ago, you were right at the end of World War II. What happened?
Well, I was telling Trina the other day, I weighed 170 pounds. Today I weigh 168 pounds, which is very unusual. But after World War II, the economy of the country exploded because there was a lot of things that had been put on hold during the war, and it all opened up: housing, automobiles, medicine, all these things now begin to blossom. And for a long time, the country was doing very, very well.
As a young man, you saw segregation in all its horror. It was not pleasant, was it?
Well, not at all. It's very unfair, and thank goodness we're slowly getting over it. And I want you to know something. When I was about 8 or 10 years old, I used to ride a school bus 8 miles into town for my last 8 years of school. Half-empty school bus passed 5 or 6 black kids walking to school at a school that was halfway to where we were going. And I came home one day, and I asked my father, he said, "Father, why don't they stop to pick up those kids? The bus is half-empty." And my daddy looked at me, and he said, "Son, that's wrong, and someday it's going to be stopped, and maybe you'll be in a position to make it happen." And you know what? Every day that I was helpful to do that, I thought of my father.
And then segregation became part of your political legacy. You certainly were a progressive for your time.
Oh yes, I helped. I served on a city council with two black fellows who were friends of mine, and they were the first blacks elected in a racially mixed community. And while I was in Congress, I appointed the first black postmaster in a racially mixed community. And I want you to know something. He took a lot of criticism, but he served well. And the people that had been very critical of him learned to respect him. And to the credit of the white folks in Palmetto, he and they got along. And it was a great example of how things like that can work if you have the right attitude.
What do you think your chief legacy is?
Well, I like to believe that while I was in charge and when I had an opportunity, I did things to make things better for other people. Even now, just this morning, I got a phone call from a lady that I helped to get her child back, who is now, she's from DeRidder. Her child is in Alaska based upon circumstances not necessary to talk here. A grandchild, rather. And she was having trouble with the bureaucracy to get it done. I contacted the governor. He contacted his people. They contacted the people in Alaska, and we got it worked out.
All right, hold tight. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll wrap it up with Governor Edwin Washington Edwards right after this brief pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and our guest for a few more minutes is Edwin Washington Edwards, going into overtime with us on his 91st birthday. Did you ever expect to live this long, Governor?
Yes. I have two grandparents that lived over 100 years old. My mother died at 96. And the good genes are very common in my family.
Well, Nancy Kaufman says she was working at a bookstore, Books a Million, when your book came out, and people were lined up to get it and said they would vote for you again. And, of course, you ended up running for Congress. That really wasn't a good district for you, though, was it?
It was impossible. I had no idea that it was that gerrymandered. But Graves is doing a good job. I think it's going to be awfully hard for a Democrat to get elected in this district.
You seem to like Congressman Graves, even though your political philosophies are different. He's a charismatic guy, and he seems to like you.
Yeah, we got along fine. I don't agree with his political attitude. I never would have voted to take away Medicaid for 500,000 people in the state, but he did. And my only complaint about him is I think he's too loyal to Trump.
Well, almost every Republican is.
I know.
And you're a good friend, or you were a good friend of Donald Trump, but my guess is if you had been elected to Congress, you would be criticizing him.
Well, I certainly would not agree with some of his policies. This tariff business is crazy.
Well, Governor, it is an honor to talk with you, and we wish you well, and hopefully we'll keep this tradition going. You once said you'd talk with me on your birthday every year until I die. So God bless you.
Well, by the time that happens, radio will be gone.
Thank you, Governor. Happy birthday.
Let me ask this question off the record.
Yeah, sure.
Are y'all?
I'm on right now.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I'll call you right back after the show, okay?
All right.
All right. Thank you, Governor. God bless. Paul Greenberg is with us. His book is The Omega Principle, Seafood and the Quest for a Long Life and a Healthier Planet. He has previously authored Four Fish and the American Catch, regular contributor to the New York Times. And good morning to you, Paul Greenberg.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Well, tell us what the Omega Principle is.
Well, the Omega Principle is really about omega-3 fatty acids, which is, that's the thing, that's the main reason a lot of us eat seafood, and it's one of the main reasons we're sort of obsessed with taking fish oil supplements. And so the book that I've written is really an investigation of the whole omega-3 phenomenon, both from like a health craze phenomenon, but also from the way that actually, marine ecosystems work and the way those key ingredients get to us as consumers of seafood and as supplements. So a lot of the book is really kind of a pinging back and forth between fishermen and fishing communities, but also this huge supplement industry that's now worth billions of dollars, which actually recently is really coming up against some serious scientific doubt as to whether omega-3 fatty acids work in supplement form.
Well, omega-3s are they're fats, aren't they?
They are. So omega-3s are fatty acids, polyunsaturated fatty acids, and they're actually a huge part of human metabolism and the way the human body works. 10% of your brain by weight is actually omega-3 fatty acids. They're also implicated in anti-inflammatory reactions, and that's one of the reasons people started getting excited about them in the 1970s was, they sent a bunch of scientists up to Greenland, where they found that Inuit people had very low levels of cardiovascular disease, but also very high levels of omega-3s because they were eating lots of whales and seals and things like that. So they sort of formed this hypothesis that if you have high levels of omega-3s in your blood, you would have lower risk of a heart attack or a stroke. That was what they found in the 70s anyway, but all of that is kind of coming up for question literally as we speak. There's been a couple of big mm-hmm. findings that have come out in the last few years that have really shown no effect of omega-3s on cardiovascular health.
The book is The Omega Principle, Seafood and the Quest for a Long Life and a Healthier Planet. And omega-3s, you say, definitively come from seafood.
They do. I mean, you can get them from vegetable sources, but the main way that humans get them is through seafood. And the main way that the supplement industry gets them is actually by these things called the reduction industry. And I know, down there in Louisiana, you have this huge reduction industry that catches menhaden, or I don't know if you call them pogies down there or what, they're just named different things, but it's actually the most voluminously caught fish in the continental United States. And it's almost entirely boiled down and used for animal feed, for fertilizer, and most recently, dietary supplements. So there's this, there's this multi-billion-dollar a year industry called the reduction industry, and overall they take out of the ocean between 20 and 25 million metric tons of fish every single year. That's the equivalent of the human weight of the United States taken out of the ocean every year for animal feed and for supplements.
Do you think the supplements work as well as getting them from seafood?
I am under the impression that seafood is the better way to do it. I should say that as part of the research for this book, I actually did an experiment on myself where I ate seafood every single meal for a year and tested my health before and after. I wouldn't say that that is something I would recommend to everybody, but just all the research that I have done gives me a very strong impression that if you're going to have omega-3s, your body absorbs them best in the context of the other nutrients that fish provide. And the other thing I'd say also about, you know, about seafood is that really it's bigger than just omega-3s. It's really about what is the most efficient and nutritious way to get protein into our bodies. And it turns out that fish are pretty darn efficient. You know, the amount of calories you have to eat to get a similar amount of protein from, say, beef is considerable. So if we were to have a diet that was more focused on seafood and trended away from some of these land food meats that are the majority of the American diet, I think that we would see overall better health outcomes and an overall healthier population.
What types of seafood are best for omega-3?
Well, wild salmon's really good. I'm a big fan of Alaskan sockeye salmon. Really lovely, delicious fish in season, literally as we speak. You know, a lot of these sort of oilier fish that people sometimes are a little bit, I don't know, resistant to eating are also very good sources. Anchovies, herring, sardines. You know, I know Americans tend to have this tradition of just kind of deep frying everything and going for things like tilapia or catfish and so forth, which aren't particularly high in omega-3s. But it's really these smaller, oilier fish and salmon that are the higher sources of omega-3s. Another thing to look at is actually shellfish. Oysters, which I know you have in abundance down there in Louisiana, but clams and mussels are also great sources of omega-3 fatty acids.
Well, the business is now, it's easily $1 billion or more business, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, it's not just the supplements. There's also a huge amount of omega-3 supplemented products. I know there was a big dust-up recently when the Trump administration failed to endorse breastfeeding as a way of getting nutrients into our infants. And in fact, there's a huge industry in supplementing baby formula with omega-3 fatty acids. But I should note that actually breastfeeding is probably the major way that we get omega-3s into our brains as infants. And so, I don't know. I mean, the idea that this administration won't kind of come out in favor of breastfeeding, that to me raises a few eyebrows, especially when it comes to brain health and intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Now, a listener asked about the major benefits of omega-3. It's an anti-inflammatory supplement. Is that fair to say it's the biggest advantage of it?
No, I mean, see, the anti-inflammatory side of things, especially when it comes to cardiovascular health, is the thing that's coming up against the greatest scrutiny right now. I actually think that when they start delving deeper into what the omega-3 does, I think the brain is going to start taking more of a central role. Because, you know, again, if you just look at the raw biology of the way the brain works, I mean, you know, it's 10% DHA omega-3 fatty acid by weight. So that's significant.
Well, the book is a compelling one, The Omega Principle, Seafood and the Quest for a Long Life and a Healthier Planet. And this is from a man who once ate seafood every meal for a year?
Indeed.
For 1 year.
Yes. Well, don't do this at home, but do eat seafood.
Well, congratulations, Paul Greenberg, and we commend you for your work, and it is a provocative work. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And before we part company on the 7th day of August, 2018, 91st birthday of Edwin Washington Edwards, we'll go back to 1987. Yesterday we had Bob Livingston. He was in that race in which Buddy Romer ran first, Edwin Edwards second, and Bob Livingston third, Billy Tozan four, and Jim Brown five. Here's how it sounded on the night of October 24th, 1987, at the Monteleon, when Edwin Edwards, in his only gubernatorial loss, in the wee hours of the morning, past 2 o'clock, decided to throw in the towel.
Under the circumstances, since I did not run first, it would be inappropriate for me to continue this election. Please hear me out. Please hear me out. Please hear me out. I have to do... I have... I have to do what I think is best for my state. I don't want it further divided. There's never been a time in modern history when the combined efforts of the media has been so bent and dedicated on taking over the governor's office.
That was 31 years ago. And Edwin Washington Edwards has had a full life, shall we say, living through the Depression and World War II, member of Congress, four-term governor, 8 years in federal prison, and now at 91, a 39-year-old wife and a 5-year-old son. We're back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.